Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link this Wednesday, the 27th of December, 2017. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Just a reminder, we are also live on Facebook, DW Africa.
And in today's program, vote counting gets underway in Liberia as George Weah says he is confident of a win.
This victory is certain, and I'm going to win. Obuaka cannot win or George Weah.
And as Liberians wait to know their next president, we review the legacy of the outgoing president and Nobel Peace Prize winner, Johnson Sirleaf.
Because on the one hand, she is responsible for helping to sustain peace in Liberia. And the fact remains that Liberia remains a country that is really undeveloped. It ranks among the lowest.
These are some of the stories we have lined up for you.
But first, here is a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Sertile Sanderson with DW News. Former Liberian soccer star George Weah said he was set to win Liberia's presidential election runoff against Vice President Joseph Boakai in the country's first democratic transfer of power in more than seven decades. Liberian election officials began counting the votes on Wednesday and plan to announce preliminary results in the afternoon, with final results due on Thursday. Unofficial partial results announced on local radio stations all showed Weah in the lead. Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has appointed the country's former military commander, Constantino Chiwenga, as one of his two vice presidents. The move has deepened concerns about the military's influence after its ouster of former President Robert Mugabe in November. Chiwenga had famously characterized Zimbabwe under 93-year-old Mugabe's rule as a colony in the making.
It is our strong and deeply considered position that if drastic action is not taken immediately, our beloved country, Zimbabwe, is definitely headed to becoming a new colony again.
The appointment of Chiwenga as vice president was, however, widely expected following his retirement earlier this month. Chiwenga had to step down from the military in order to take up the position in accordance with the country's constitution. The United States military confirmed that it carried out an airstrike against the Al-Shabaab Islamist group in Somalia over Christmas, leaving 13 suspected terrorists dead. The U.S. has stepped up its operations in Somalia in recent weeks, with frequent airstrikes against Al-Shabaab and a separate, self-proclaimed branch of the Islamic State terror group in the Horn of Africa. 3 weeks ago, the U.S. killed another 8 militants belonging to Al-Shabaab, while an airstrike in November reportedly left more than 100 jihadists dead. The Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab group has been fighting to overthrow successive internationally-backed governments in Mogadishu since 2007 and has widely been blamed for the country's worst-ever bombing, which in October 2017 left more than 500 dead. You're listening to DW News. Former Ivorian Public Service Minister Hubert Houllaye has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for allegedly funding the assassination of 18 people, including seven UN soldiers, during an attack in 2012. Houllaye commented after the verdict that it was a political conviction and that the court had no proof for its allegations. The 64-year-old former government minister is expected to file an appeal. His lawyer, Rodrigue Dadje, said that Houllaye was being sent to prison in order to keep him from participating in the political scene again.
For me, the proceedings should have been dismissed, pure and simple. This sentence to condemnation of 20 years is a political decision. I think it has been made to ensure Mr. Hubert Houllaye is unable to do any harm to the political scene.
Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny announced that he was going to organize a nationwide rally on January 28 to support his call for a boycott of next year's presidential election. Navalny has been banned from taking part in the March 18 election over a suspended prison sentence, which he claims was fabricated. Many governments, including the U.S., have expressed concerns over the Electoral Commission's decision to bar opposition leader Navalny. Russia's foreign ministry said that such criticism amounted to direct interference into the country's electoral process. Russian President Vladimir Putin, meanwhile, filed documents with electoral officials to run for re-election next year. The 65-year-old Russian strongman is expected to extend his term until 2024, which would make him the longest-serving Russian leader since dictator Joseph Stalin. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
This is DW's Africa Link with yet another exciting program. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We'd also like to welcome our listeners on Facebook.
And we start off in Liberia, where vote counting is underway after a presidential runoff yesterday. The National Election Commission is expected to announce official preliminary results later on today. But the George Weah camp is already claiming victory. Liberians hope that the election will mark the country's first peaceful transfer of power in over 70 years and that the new president will revamp the economy and create the much-needed jobs. Megan Miriam reports.
Observers say the election has gone off smoothly, with only minor irregularities. Former Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, who was there to observe the vote count, called on the candidates to respect the result and the will of the people.
So one person must win. That person is a Liberian. The person who loses is also a Liberian. So the issue is not winning or losing. If you win, you celebrate, and you celebrate him assuredly because you're going to be the president of everybody. If you lose, you also accept gallantly.
It's a runoff vote between former international footballer George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai, both of whom joined voters in casting their ballots. Born in a slum in the capital, Monrovia, George Weah's star performances for Europe's biggest football teams in the 90s won the hearts of young Liberians. This is his second run for president.
This victory is certain, and I'm going to win. Obuaka cannot win, or George Weah.
Outgoing President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's rule cemented peace in the West African country after civil war ended in 2003. But the majority of Liberians still live in dire poverty. Whoever wins this election will face that challenge and will have to prove that he can govern in a way that will benefit the country and its citizens.
Reporting.
Now, Ayeko, people have been talking and asking what kind of legacy President Ellen Johnson leaves behind after 12 years in power. As we just had in that report by Megan Miriam, there are mixed perceptions because some people feel she did well enough and others think she underperformed. So to expound further on this, I talked to Elizabeth Donnelly, Deputy Head of Chatham House Africa Program.
Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves a mixed legacy behind her. Mixed because on the one hand, she is responsible for helping to sustain peace in Liberia since the end of the civil war in 2003. She's also taken positive steps to improve the livelihoods and particularly protection for women in Liberia, such as from 2005, ensuring that women could be recruited into the armed forces. And so she has tried to take steps there. She is also keen to see that there is a professional and peaceful transition to the next government in Liberia in January.
Liberia ranks 90 out of 176 countries in the 2016 Corruption Perception Index by Transparency International. Do you think this dents her achievements as the first African woman president?
Unfortunately, it does dent her achievement. This has really captured headlines and overshadowed what she's done. And the fact remains that Liberia remains a country that is really undeveloped. It ranks among the lowest of countries in the low development group in the Human Development Index. So it has a long way to go. And this is why, in part, the rhetoric for change is winning in Liberia in terms of this election.
Now, poverty levels and unemployment, especially among the youth, remain high, making Liberia one of the world's poorest nations. Can you tell us why you think Sirleaf was not able to deal with the rampant poverty in her country, despite having worked at the World Bank and UN agencies which deal with issues that directly affect ordinary people? She even won the Nobel Prize in 2011.
Now, part of this is capacity to implement policy. If you are looking at an immediate post-conflict environment,
it can be difficult and complex to do the work of rebuilding the country, consolidating peace, sustaining a transition towards democracy, all at the same time.
Well, basing on all this, what should be the main priorities for the incoming president, since he's bound to inherit a string of challenges?
One of the key things that different voters, male and female, remarked upon was just the need to have more roads. Where Liberia is in West Africa, it suffers very heavy rainfall. It means moving around the country is very difficult. This has clear implications for development, for trade, for small business growth in the country. And then linked to that, of course, this issue of jobs, inclusive economic growth, and, of course, sustaining peace.
Elizabeth Donnelly, Deputy Head, Africa Programme, Chatham House.
And just reacting on that one, I mean, about Ellen Johnson's performance, we have a comment coming in from Caleb Chauro from Nairobi. He says, Ellen Johnson has done her part. The problem with our developing country is that they're held captive by cartels created by developed countries. She is one of her own.
Charles Ongole John of the Kumi Central Listeners Club from Uganda says Madam Sirleaf picked Liberia from the quagmire. That she didn't train in corruption could mitigate against her record, but her record overall is good in the sense of stabilizing Liberia.
Yes. Interesting comments. Keep them coming and we shall read them as and when they come. But first, you take us to what is happening elsewhere in the world.
Yes, and back here in Europe, focus today has been on the prisoner exchange between Ukraine forces and pro-Russian rebels following the recommitment to a ceasefire in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine last week. It is said to be the largest such swap since the 2014 outbreak of the insurgency, which led to at least 10,000 people being killed. Laila Harak talked to DW's David Stern.
It's now underway, but this will be a swap that goes in stages. What we know at the moment is that 16 Ukrainians have been returned to the Ukrainian side. As you have said before, there's going to be quite a few more of them, as well as 304 of the Russian-backed separatists that are going to be returning home. Now, the Ukrainians also say that some of the separatists have refused or do not want to go back. We have not confirmed that, but there is a question of what the final number will be. And as you said, this is a major exchange. It's also the first exchange of this size in more than a year. So obviously this is something that people here in Kiev, as well as the rest of the country, are watching very closely.
What do you make of this? Could we see a ceasefire on the horizon, possible resumption of the peace process?
I guess we'll have to see what the momentum is. The Ukrainians say there are a number of their people that are still on the rebel side, close to 100. So if we see further prisoner exchanges, that's obviously a positive sign. But ultimately, what people are hoping for is a full ceasefire for an extended period of time. We're not seeing that right now. There's been heavy fighting in the last week. In fact, in the last 24 hours, one Ukrainian soldier was killed and five wounded. And we also heard over the weekend, Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron calling for this immediate ceasefire. So far, we haven't seen it.
DW's David Stern talking to Laila Harak.
It's interesting how the whole country is about politics. I always find it interesting that when we are on air, we are talking about politics. And on that note, we have a comment here back on our top story, that's elections in Liberia. We have a comment coming from Charles Onyango-Bo. This is a renowned media practitioner who says, Liberia, George Weah has been voted. Let's see if he has learned something, or if he learned something from the football that he will bring on the pitch.
And there's one we are from a user by the name Uganda, Nairobian, who says, I'm wondering if our Dennis Onyango can reach such heights in this political event of Uganda. I don't know how the two connect. Uganda.
Well, because George Weah was a footballer, and Dennis Onyango is also a footballer. So he's probably imagining that one day he could get into politics in Uganda. That's not all. We have another one coming from Kasim Muhammad Kasim from Tanzania, who says, fighting miserable things in society is not an easy thing.
And Joseph Eboa from Ghana says, the problem with Liberia, and for that matter Africa, is that we cannot bring better things. It is about Africans changing their ways of thinking.
Keep those comments coming. and keep it to Africa Link. We are still on Africa Link, and we do welcome your comments. We do encourage you to listen to the program on DW Facebook Africa. We are live. You can join the program there, follow the conversation, and we shall read your comments as and when we can.
Just imagine, the fish comes from China, even though we've got this lake right here. What's the use of it then?
We are still keeping it here on Africa Link, and in the next session, we shall be heading to Rwanda. Now, to bring you this story, the end of a year's holiday is normally an opportunity for families and friends to come together and make merry. On the streets of Kigali, however, the story is different for street children. Most did not celebrate Christmas and are only hoping that the New Year celebrations will be a little different. DW's Nasra Bishumba in Kigali went to find out and sent us this report.
The streets of Kigali are bustling with activity as shoppers hop from one store to another, a common occurrence at this time of the year. The mood is that of excitement as families use the opportunity to visit restaurants and go shopping. But in the midst of this excitement, street children can also be seen miserably loitering around, hoping to get some money or freebies from well-wishers. The lucky ones get paid for their services of carrying the shoppers' bags. 15-year-old Jack Niyomugabo tells me that he has lived on the streets for the last 4 years after he lost his mother. He tells me that he did not celebrate Christmas, but he's hopeful that next year will be different.
I'm thankful that I'm alive, but for next year my wish is that, God willing, I'm able to work on these streets and, if possible, be able to save something small. I also wish to get some sort of vocational training or just be able to go back to school. If not, I would love to learn how to drive and be a professional driver and finally get off these streets.
Emmanuel Shimimana, also 15, says that for 2018, he hopes for a change from his usual routine of carrying luggage and other menial jobs.
My job is to help shoppers with their purchases. I was here on Christmas Day. My wish for 2018 is to stop doing this kind of work and get something better to do as a source of income so that I can improve the quality of my life.
Recently, the Rwandan government embarked on an ambitious program of closing down orphanages. Since then, social workers like Marie-Josiane Wiringimana, who once headed an orphanage in Kigali, says that they cannot offer material support to street children anymore, apart from advocacy.
Like some of us who had orphanages that often followed up on the welfare of street children, we were not able to organize anything for them for Christmas because most of the children in orphanages were taken in by foster families. All we can do now is advocacy for street children in the concerned institutions and follow up on the children and see if they are living a good life in terms of their basic rights.
Despite the crackdown by the police and local authorities, nearly 2,000 children are estimated to be living on the streets of Kigali. For now, Jack and Emmanuel can only hope not to be rounded up by authorities and go on to achieve their dreams of earning a decent living away from street life.
Nasra Bishumba in Kigali.
On the spot.
To Guinea now, where many young people attempt the dangerous land and sea journey to Europe in search of a better life. Those who don't make it and return home face the challenge of rebuilding their lives. Near Guinea's capital, Conakry, there is a project helping them reintegrate into society. DW reporters Annabel Stephens-Halmer and Bob Barry filed this report.
It's early morning on a chicken farm near Conakry. Mamadou Toulel Barry is working for a project for returned migrants. Barry himself tried to reach Europe last year, but he only made it as far as Niger. He saw many of his friends die along the way, and he was tortured by people smugglers and thrown in jail by soldiers. After he was released, the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, flew him back home.
After I returned, many people made fun of me because I didn't make it. But I felt relieved. I'm back home now, and no one is oppressing me. I'm living well. In Niger, we had problems with the military, and we were discriminated against.
A total of 300 people work for the EU-funded project, which was launched by the IOM and a local NGO. The most important aspect, its members are made up of equal numbers of returnees and local residents. That's to ensure there's no resentment. Women also play a crucial role in the reintegration of the returnees.
Our own children are not among the returnees, but these young people could easily be our children. That's why we take care of them.
Soon, the first chickens and eggs will be sold. With 300 participants, though, the first payment will probably be low. But at least they'll earn some income. Many young people in Guinea have lost hope. Well-paid jobs are hard to find, and there aren't enough career options. For many, escaping to Europe seems like the only way out. So the local job office and the IOM interviewed young people in Conakry.
The interviews helped us determine who is most likely to leave the country illegally. We then selected them for a total of 21 projects, such as the chicken farm, and now we're supporting them.
Other young people will hopefully be spared Barry's terrible experience. He's now living with relatives in Conakry and is studying political science. For now, he's given up his dream of reaching Europe.
All of my friends warned me before I left, but I had to experience it for myself to believe them. All I would say to my friends now is, don't even try. It destroys you. Even if you do survive, either you feel so ashamed that you didn't make it, or you go crazy.
It's not clear whether he can really stop his friends from leaving. The IOM estimates that around 15,000 Guineans are still waiting to be repatriated.
A report by Annabel Stephens-Halma and Bob Barry.
Living Planet Africa.
We now head to Kenya, where news of Chinese fish flooding the market is not new. In fact, it's being blamed for threatening the livelihoods of traditional fisherfolk along Lake Victoria in Kenya. Many locals were caught by surprise when they first heard this because they could not understand how fish could be imported when Lake Victoria was just around the corner. But what is behind these fish imports from China? Linda Staude visited the shores of Lake Victoria and filed this report, now read by Natalie Muller.
Waves are gently lapping up onto the shores of Lake Victoria. Fishing boats cruise to and fro. Most of them are traditional sailing boats and canoes with paddles. A few have modern outboard motors. Joseph Ndaji has spent almost his entire life on boats like these. He's now 78, but he can vividly recall the golden days of the fishing industry on the world's second largest freshwater lake.
In the olden days, you could just cook up some corn and then put the pot into the water. The fish would swim into the pot and you could take them right home and cook them. Or you could take a rod and put a bit of corn on the hook. Soon after, you would catch fish, big fish.
In the 80s and 90s, the fishermen had plenty of edible fish, huge tilapia in their nets. But the boom days are over. Now the ecosystem is under threat. John Otieno complains that environmental pollution is adding to the problem and ruining their business.
Factories and industrial companies dump everything in the lake. It's badly polluted, and we know which companies discharge their wastewater into the lake.
But the fishermen themselves are also part of the problem. A lot of them were attracted by huge catches during peak times, and overfishing has decimated the sought-after tilapia. Recently, fish processors started buying tilapia from China so they wouldn't miss out on the lucrative export business. But this unleashed a storm of protest.
Our concern is that the government permitting fish import from China must therefore be seen as nothing less than a scheme to completely kill the fishing industry in Kenya, in total disregard of the livelihoods being put at risk and possibilities of serious job losses for our fisher folk.
That's Nicholas Ngumbo. He's a Member of Parliament for the Lake Region around Kisumu. His colleague, Shakir Sabir, has threatened to take action.
We want to give notice to all these fish processors that if we find you bringing those fish here, we're not only going to boycott you, we are going to make sure that you do not operate from Kisumu.
The members of parliament are suggesting that the fish industry should get the same protection measures and subsidies as, for example, sugar producers, as it makes sure the fishermen are on their side.
Just imagine, the fish comes from China, even though we've got this lake right here. What's the use of it then? Why can't the government take care of the lake so that it can provide us with as much fish as China?
Report by Linda Staude.
It's interesting. When it comes to food, we are all ready to comment, and people have been commenting on that one as well. And I mean, our social media editor did ask people, if you had a choice between locally grown food and imported food, which one would you pick and why? And Obino Chigozi says, why import while you can farm it just on at the back of your house? It's more profitable and less stressful. And another one from Pascal from Ghana, who says locally made food because it's so natural and contains no chemicals. The food generally got natural taste and it gives you the exact nutrients that you need. Those are the comments on the fishing industry in Kenya.
And Jane, I'm looking at Facebook and we are already getting more comments on that topic. And Solomon Ologe says, it depends on the cash at hand. He says, I prefer to buy what I can pay for than to buy locally made food that is very expensive.
And Fabian Joseph from Zanzibar says, local is my preference. And another one says, wisdom, I love local food, nothing much.
I have to read this one because David Dutt thinks locally made with less chemical composition.
And another story that we did not cover on radio but on our Facebook page, a Cameroonian court on Wednesday, which is today, freed dissident author Patrice Ngananga, I can't get that name rightly. He is accused of threatening President Paul Biya on social media. Now, according to the local media, the court ordered him to be expelled from the country. And people have been commenting on that one.
Well, I have to start with the first one from Homeboy, who says Patrice Nangang is being ushered out of Kondengui prison some minutes ago. He's being ferried to the airport to be expelled out of Cameroon. He leaves Cameroon this afternoon aboard on Ethiopian Airlines to New York via Addis Ababa.
Yes, because actually he has a dual citizenship. That's, he is both a Cameroonian and a citizen of the United States.
Well, I have to say some of the comments here are very, 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 very sensational. There is one that says Anglophone detainees are still in prison for crimes they did not commit. And those, Jens, are just some of the comments because this topic seems to be getting a lot of reaction from the Cameroonians.
Well, we've been reporting a lot about media freedom, social media, I mean, injustices and oppression of the media in different countries of the world. And certainly Cameroon is one of those countries where freedom of the press is not at its best.
Yes, we have another one from Percy who says he's talking about Biya and says that he has been there for long and people are actually don't have basic health in Cameroon. He says he will not stop the fight for freedom.
And we can only wish him the best as journalists. Thank you so much for all your comments and keep them coming. We can always read them as and when we can. And do remember, each time Africa Link is on air, we are also on air on Facebook. From me, Jen Ayeka-Kumet, thank you for listening.
And me, Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.